Hello, Rebels of the Sharp Illusion. Normally, I start off this podcast by saying hi, but I'm going to start this one off by saying hydration. We know how important hydration is for our bodies. It's the thing that keeps us running, right? You want to be a well-oiled machine. You want to be running efficiently. You know what can help you run efficiently? Liquid IV. It is the category-winning hydration brand fueling your well-being, and their hydration multiplier is the one product that you are missing in your daily routine. It comes in a little stick that's a powder, and in just one stick, you get 5 essential vitamins and 2 times faster hydration than water alone. If you use it first thing in the morning, maybe before a workout, when you feel run down, maybe after a long night out and doing a little partying, you know what I mean? And even, what if you have like a long flight or something like that and you just bleh, right? We all feel that way, bleh. So add this to your water, and that convenient packaging can go with you anywhere you go, even if you're going to the gym or you're traveling or you're at work and maybe you didn't have a great breakfast. At least it's something that will fuel you up in the morning. And there's a whole bunch of flavors that are available, like sea berry, strawberry lemonade, Concord grape, lemon lime, pina colada, tropical punch, watermelon, strawberry, passion fruit, guava, acai berry. Did I say that right? I never know how to say that. But those are just some of the flavors. Here's some statistics for you folks. One stick of Liquid IV in 16 ounces of water contains 5 essential vitamins: B3, B5, B6, B12, and even vitamin C. And we all know how important those B vitamins are. It's got 3 times the electrolytes of traditional sports drinks. It's made with premium ingredients. It's non-GMO, and it is free from gluten, dairy, and soy. I'm going to offer you a great deal, Rebels. If you go to liquidiv.com and use offer code Sherpa, you can get 20% off of anything that you order on that site when you're shopping for some better hydration. So that's Liquid IV. Check it out at liquidiv.com.
The Sherpa Screening Room is a presentation of Too Many Podcast, which is brought to you in cooperation with the SJ Network. If you're someone who'd like to appear on podcasts, contact Stephen Joyner at s-j-network.com. This show is hosted by Jim the Podcast Sherpa. With a name like that, you can't say I didn't warn you.
This week, on The Sherpa Screening Room, our guest is musician and songwriter Okori Johnson, who is known as OK Cello. Since we normally start off with a bad joke, I'm guessing you don't have a cello joke to tell.
Why did the cello break up with the violin? It was tired of playing second fiddle.
Coming to you from Sherpa Chalet in beautiful downtown Mount Podcastia, it's time for entertainment interviews in the Sherpa Screening Room. Grab an aisle seat and a bucket of popcorn, but don't crunch too loud or you'll miss the show. Now, here's your host, Jim the Podcast Sherpa.
Hello there, Rebels of the Sharp Illusion, and welcome to the Sharpa Screening Room. It is a presentation of Too Many Podcasts, the podcast about podcasts. Jim, the podcast Sharpa, coming to you from Sharpaloo Studios, high atop Mount Podcastia. And these episodes are a little bit different, you know, if you've never been here before. These are the episodes where I get to speak to creators, you know, the writers, the authors, the singers, the musicians. And you're going to like the interview that I have for you today. Now, I'm going to ask you an unusual question. So if I were to start talking to you about cello music, I'm sure you'd probably be thinking about maybe a lot of classical music, very slow, moody stuff. Maybe Yo-Yo Ma might come to mind. Well, I've had an interview with this guest today, and we got to know each other for a little while, had a great time talking to him. His name is Okori Johnson, professionally known as OK Cello. And he's down in Atlanta, Georgia, and he's doing some amazing things with cello music. He will definitely change your perception of what you think the cello can do. And he's a man on a mission, I tell you. And we talk a lot about cello looping, too. You don't know what looping is? Well, you're going to find out in this interview very shortly. And we talked about a whole bunch of other stuff, too. Really super interesting guy. I think that it's an interview that you're going to enjoy. So have a listen to my interview with Okori Johnson, also known as OK Cello.
Hello there, Rebels. We are here in the music room of the Sherpa Chalet. I am so thrilled to have the guest that we have today. His name is Okori Johnson. You may know him as OK Cello, and he's coming to us from Atlanta, where he is based, and he is a musician, a cellist, a songwriter, an improviser, and I love this, a looper. I've never spoken to a looper before. Okori, welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for having me. I'm so glad to be here.
Do you want to tell everybody what a looper does?
Yeah. So a looper is a small little analog computer, really. Okay. Maybe digital if it's a computer, but it's a small little computer that I use with my foot. There are lots of different kinds of loopers. They're like tabletop loopers, but a lot of the ones that I use are pedal loopers, and you press a button, it records what you're playing live, and then you press that same button and it will stop recording and instantly play that back.
So it becomes like a backing track.
It can be like a backing track. Like you can use it like a backing track. Uh-huh. Or you could use it to like develop an idea real time, right? So like, Okay. Yeah, it comes in like an ensemble, but sometimes backing tracks are just like, you know, a little drums here, a little, you know, but this can be a really fully, as a matter of fact, there's a song I wrote called Cloudy Morns, where it's this full on 3-minute communication, and then I loop it, and then I go back and I play a completely different thing over top of it. So it like takes on a new feel. So, but anyway, all that to say that you press a button, it records, it plays back, and then you press that same button again, and you can keep recording. And then it'll do that over and over again until you have like an ensemble, an orchestra, as many people as you can imagine. It starts losing its distinction. It starts being somewhat difficult to distinguish the layers after about 9 or 10 layers, you know?
Sure.
But you can theoretically go up to like, what, you know, 1 million if you wanted to. So.
Now, you've played with both symphony orchestras and solo as well. And the looper kind of becomes like your backing band.
It does. You know, I didn't as an adult professional really play classically. So I didn't really play in orchestras much. I played classically as a kid. I played in orchestras. I was being prepared to kind of go to music school, but I didn't. As a matter of fact, I put the cello down. And what made me pick it back up was Stone Temple Pilots. Randomly, a buddy of mine was.
Which, of course, it does for everybody else too, I'm sure.
Of course, absolutely, right? but yeah, so, you know, I picked it back up in college and ended up going down a very different path, a kind of folk, rock, soul, jazz. I even played with a goth band for a hot minute, or I sat in with a goth band for a hot minute, but all on the cello. And that was the majority of my career from about 19 until about 40.
Okay.
Playing songwriters and other people's projects. OPP, that's a different OPP.
Yeah, that's a different show, too.
But when I was 40, that's when the solo stuff started. And the looper has really allowed me to have a solo career because it all of a sudden gave me control over all of the voices, all of the parts, and it gave my imagination permission to kind of imagine vertically rather than just one part that followed along with somebody else's idea.
I want to talk about your past in a minute, but I know you said 40 was the real turning point for you. You were actually a filmmaker at first, right? You weren't really pursuing too much with the music?
Well, it wasn't so much that I wasn't pursuing it as much as it was what was feeding me. You know,
okay.
So I used to be an English teacher, and then I left the classroom to produce a film. I have always been a cellist. You know, from the time that I was in college, I played, you know, well enough professionally to be able to feed myself, right?
Okay.
While I was, you know, teaching, I still was playing music. And I left the classroom thinking that the cello would, you know, keep my lights on while I made this film. And the cello kept my lights on. I didn't make the film. As a matter of fact, what ended up happening was the film slowly but surely faded to the back. And the cello just really took this as its moment to step to center stage and, you know, shine. So really grateful for this moment. I don't think I would be playing the cello if I hadn't gone through trying to make a film. So I'm kind of grateful that the film didn't work out because it gave birth to the cello.
From what I read, you broke out the looper. We'll bring back the looper. And you started playing around with that and you had a melody on it. And the song ultimately became 40, right?
40. Yeah. Yeah, all of this happened on my 40th birthday. Like, there were a lot of things that were going on, the most significant of which was I'd been out of the classroom now for about 3 years and thought that I would be further along in the whole film production thing.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't as far along as I needed to be, or at least as I wanted to be. So it was becoming clear that I needed to probably go back to the classroom, or at least take the advice that everyone was giving me and write a vampire film. Someone who write a vampire film. It was the age of, you know, of Vampire Diaries and what's the other one? What's the big movie one? It's not Moonlight. It's called anyway. But you all know the one I'm talking about. And then
Twilight.
Yes. So that's what they wanted me to do. High concept. If I want to write a romance, it needs to be a high concept with monsters. And that felt like a big failure of integrity. So I just knew this was December 2014. And I knew I was probably going to have to go start interviewing in February to get back into the classroom. And the song happened. It changed everything for me. It didn't change everything immediately, but it changed enough inside of me that I kept listening and I kept playing and I kept pursuing and it kept giving, it kept inviting. So, you know, that song turned into five, those five turned into a concert that I did in January of 2015. That concert went really well. And of course it was just friends and family at first, but then I decided to do another one in February. And then I decided to do a concert series, and that concert series went really well. I did one concert every month for 2015, and two of those concerts were outside of Atlanta. One was in DC, one was in London. And by the end of that year, life had changed really radically for me. And I don't know that my fears of sustenance were gone, or that my anxiety, you know, had suddenly faded to black, but there was enough going on with the music that I was both engaged making money and being led, you know. So I didn't have to do the leading. With the film, I had like a 5-year plan and I had books and I was, you know, trying to do that. With the music thing, it still to this day has been a thing that has been pulling me. And I'm just trying to hold on, honestly. Mm-hmm.
You actually opened up for Maxwell, is that correct?
I did. Randomly, you know, I'm not even sure how that happened. I've got a good relationship with the Atlanta Symphony Orchestra, which is the big, you know, kind of regional Southeast professional orchestra here. They do like pop shows from time to time where, you know, big artists will come through and they'll use some of their members as their orchestra. And, he needed an opener for that kind of show, right? It wasn't his normal neo soul band show. Right. It was a show with the symphony.
Okay.
So they were like, well, who would be a good opener for Maxwell with the symphony? Okay. Cello. So they called, I mean, it was like really short notice too. It was like maybe two weeks before he was going to play. And they asked me to open up, and I did. It was great. It's at Chastain. It was the biggest audience I'd probably played to that point. Big open amphitheater north of Atlanta. And I guess it's not called the Cadence Bank or something like that amphitheater now. It's not called Chastain anymore. But yeah, I got a chance to meet him. He came back into my dressing room while I was playing and said, where's that music, that beautiful music coming from? It was a good moment. It was a real highlight in my life and career. So
I can imagine. Now, you started when you were 6 years old. Both of your parents were classical musicians?
That might be overstating it slightly.
Okay.
They played when they were younger. They played in the orchestra. My mom played flute, and I guess she played flute in the marching band, and maybe she played viola in the orchestra. And my dad played trumpet in the orchestra. Both of them stopped playing in high school. So, you know, familiar with music, lovers of music for sure. Both of them really, really love music. But neither of them maintained a relationship with their instruments, you know, as adults. So, I don't know that I had a model in the house. I didn't have anyone who was playing music.
You know, it's interesting because a lot of the stuff that you do, I mean, they refer to it. I've seen labels on it calling it classical, but it's really kind of beyond that. You know, you've kind of like breathing new life into, you know, a very well-established genre. But I mean, you know, especially I think with cello music, because I think when people think of cellos, they think, oh, Yo-Yo Ma, that Yo-Yo Ma is like the only cellos I've ever heard of.
Yeah. Well, you know, that's, you know, this is certainly an ambitious posture to have, but, you know, I want to be the other cellos that people know. It's not a huge ambition, right? Because it's not like The field is littered with popular cellists. They're brilliant, brilliant cellists in the world. Shea Coo, Connie Mason, there's Kevin O, there's Zoe Keating. There's all these really, really amazing cellists that I know and I appreciate. And you only really know of them if you are into classical music or in a particular area of music where you would know them, right? It's not like Pavarotti, right? Once upon a time, all of us knew who Pavarotti was, not because we listened to opera, but because he was just that guy. He was the popular person.
Right.
Because Yo-Yo Ma is that guy. But the difference is, you know, underneath the Pavarotti, I can never remember how to say his name. There are hundreds of other singers that just don't sing opera. Mm-hmm. While underneath of Yo-Yo Ma, there are not hundreds of other cellists that just play something else. There are not even hundreds of other cellists that people know about. People might know about these three folks. They might know about the two cellos. Mm-hmm. Yeah. They might know about piano guys. And they don't play the cello, but black violin. And Lindsey Stirling. I guess Stirling. Those are the four, right? But of those four, what I do is just very different than what they do. What they do is really amazing. I love the piano guys. I love black violin. But I really am trying to do something that doesn't really feel or sound like a classical blend, even though I'm on the cello. Mm-hmm. I think I'm using like classical scales a little bit. I use, you know, your basic major and minor a lot. I use a blues scale quite a bit. But I think my music to me feels more like folk music. It feels more like jazz. It feels more like, you know, occasionally like drum and bass or funk. I think... And I don't want it to sound light. I don't want it to be like a Bridgerton thing. You know what I mean? I don't want it to be like, oh, isn't it quaint how we're listening to City Girls or Beyonce on the instrument. I don't have any problems with that either.
Right.
But I want to write songs that feel like they were written for my instrument, and that for you to hear my music orchestrated differently is a plus, but it's not necessarily the given. It's not a reduction. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I'm really grateful because this weekend I got a chance to play with the Panama City Orchestra. So this is the second time that I've had a chance to play in front of an orchestra to be the featured soloist. But it's for a piece that Timothy Verville, who was the conductor of the Georgia Symphony Orchestra, that he wrote based on my original pieces, right? So the first piece is Elder Roots and Tree. The second piece is Dreaming of Lagos. The third piece is a cadenza in memoriam. And the fourth piece is Fire. And he has put that into an orchestral context. And it feels really beautiful and powerful, but I still wouldn't say that it sounds like canonical classical music. It's still doing something different.
Yeah, and there's actually nothing wrong with that. I mean, it's okay to take a genre in a different direction. I think sometimes people get a little uptight about that.
There's a line I'm walking, right? Because I do love classical music. Like, I still... we'll put on like the Elgar cello concerto and sometimes they'll tear, right? There's that. But at the same time, like, you know, that is not my primary musical influence. Like Prince is my primary musical influence. Bob Marley is my primary musical influence. And I'm really doing my very best to either play music like them or to play music like the people who are influenced by them. It just so happens that my primary medium is cello. So, you know, this concerto is really beautiful. And I was on a program with Tchaikovsky and Prokofiev, right? And I was like, and Timothy Verville and okay cello. Cool, I'll go over that. That's wonderful. But I'm hoping that when people listen to it, they felt like West African classical drumming. And they felt like jazz or like a Ron Carter from... you know, the book, the jazz and the hip hop age. Like there are these other influences that I'm hoping are coming through my music that people are able to get either in an orchestral context or even just in my solo.
And, you know, I think when you're doing this too, you're really providing a different kind of accessibility to people who probably don't know a lot about cello music too. It's not that straightforward, you know, like you said, classical pieces, you know, you've got influences like Prince and Bob Marley.
Yeah.
You're bringing all of that in. And diaspora music. What exactly is that?
You know, this is the heaviest part of my work, right? So the music, you know, if you just even start like looking at rock and roll, it has its roots in blues. Blues has its roots in spirituals, essentially. is the music that Africans brought with them across the transatlantic slave trade, right? And the music that has sprouted out of that original kind of primordial ooze of music is all over the world, right? It's hip hop, it's high life, it's reggae, it's funk, it's soul, it's Motown, right? And the diaspora is just a euphemism, really, to refer to people who have been displaced because of usually horrible human tragedies, like like slavery, right? So the African diaspora is all of the descendants of people who were moved to Brazil and to the Caribbean and to the United States and to Europe and to Canada. And they brought their music with them, and their music is amazing. And it has become our global music, right? Like, I love to talk about The Police. I really, really, really like Sting.
Okay.
I like The Police too, but I really, really, really like Sting. But, you know, Sting is the guy that is globally recognized and celebrated, not as much as Bob Marley, but his first album was what? The Police's first album was Regatta de Blanc, right? Reggae of the White, right? When you go back and you listen to that music, like, you're like, oh, it's rock, but it really is like reggae influence. Like, you hear that reggae and that reggae bass line, you hear those like
drum lines,
when you hit the side of the snare drum, whatever. My brain is, I must be tired tonight. And then you hear those like off those one drops off the beats, but then like one of the things that they do that's really like cool and kind of sneaky is they take the one drop that's usually off the beat and then they put it on the beat, but they keep the reggae bass line or the rim shot. Like, it's amazing, but we wouldn't have a Police and we wouldn't have a Sting without reggae. We wouldn't have punk music without reggae, right? So you can draw a straight line from like Green Day and Blink 182 to like Bob Marley, essentially, right? Like, he and the folks before Bob Marley, the ska folks who left and went. So anyway, that African diasporic music has really been the like influence for so much of our popular music. And that's what I like to listen to. And that is what I am most inspired to create on my instrument.
What's next? Do you want to do more albums? You going to tour more? You just going for more exposure? What's on the grand plan?
I tell you, plans and dreams. We'll start with plans. Plans, I've got a great new team. I've got a management team, MWO Management, Mark and Christina, and they're doing really wonderful things. I've got an agent now with Myriad Artists, and she's also kind of making some things happen, some really great things happen. So I'm hoping that we can get that machine humming, and I'd like to travel everywhere, right? I think there's probably not very much I enjoy doing except for being with my family, my wife and my daughters, more than playing the instrument. You know, I love playing my show. I love being out in front of people. I love storytelling. I love connecting with audiences. And I want to do that as much as I possibly can here in the United States and globally. My dream is, well, I'm also working on my fourth album, right? So I have three studio albums and a Christmas album.
Mm-hmm. Christmas. I like that.
Okay Christmas, right? Yeah. My fourth album is forthcoming. And it's taking a little bit longer than some of the others because I think I'm changing a little bit. I have some ambitions for that album that are different. Like, I still want it to be essentially like a cello looped album, but I want to add some other instruments. I want to add some producers. I want to add some textures and some colors that are not present in just my like solo looping work. So I'm trying to brainstorm and dream how to make that happen. But the real dream for me, I think, is to have like a 20, 30 year long career where I just get to travel the world, play music and create with people. Because I think that's the thing that I feel like brings me the most joy, like professionally or artistically.
Wouldn't it be cool that now you're still a relatively young man, but like, imagine like when you're like 65, 70 and you're maybe watching a talk show and somebody says that you're one of their influences.
Wow. Oh my gosh. Yeah, that caught me off guard a little bit.
It's possible though, right? It's not ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, you know, I think the other thing that I'm hoping that will catch on, although not for like another 10 years, is this whole cello looping thing. You know, there are other cello loopers. They're in Atlanta. There are two others, if you can imagine that, right?
Wow.
I want to shout them out. Takanobo and Jennifer Cornell, two really great cellists, really great loopers. I don't know any other cello loopers in Atlanta. The only other cello looper I know is a woman named Zoe Keating, and she's really amazing. I kind of consider her the first mover, the mother of the cello looper phenomenon. There's four people that I can name, and I can't name anymore else. Any other people. So
I think there are more of you than you're letting on.
There probably are some other. I mean, like, there are other loopers for sure, right? Lots and lots of loopers, especially like vocal loopers and beatboxers and that kind of stuff like that. But not a bunch of cello loopers. Some people who like dabble, but the two people that I mentioned, Takanobu and Jennifer Cornell, that's a staple also of what they do. Although Takanobu is also kind of like a singer-songwriter. So he's a cellist and a singer-songwriter. But anyway, oh, and there's another woman named Shauna Tucker. She's a good friend of mine too. She's more of a jazz singer, but she does loop.
If people want to find out more about you, I'll let you tell first, and I'll drop in my little editorial. What should people do if they want to find out a little bit more about you?
Yeah, so I just spent a lot of time developing this website, and I'm really hoping that it does a great job of helping people to understand what it is I do. And you know, the other thing that's interesting, Jim, is that I like to bring music to people. I like to bring music into people's homes. So I'm hoping that this website really allows people who are interested in bringing me to them to be able to do that a little bit more easily than my last website. So you can always see me there. That's at www.okcello.com. I'm everywhere that people are socially. So, you know, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. I have a TikTok. However, I am most active and most generative on Instagram. It's kind of my home socials.
And everything's okay, Cello?
Yeah, that's OKCELLO. All of them are OKCELLO.
Okay, nice and easy.
Yeah. I got lucky. I guess there weren't any other OKCELLOs.
you beat them to it.
I beat them to it. I mean, who won it? You know, the other thing that I like about OKCELLO is that, you know, it's kind of like, it's kind of self-deprecating.
OKCELLO.
Okay, you know, I'm okay. You know what I mean? So I like, there are all different kinds of ways that you can play with it. Like, or if you do something really well, I've had people come up to me like, OKCELLO. You know what I mean? Like, you know, there's just all these different ways that you can use it.
And I guess, you know, with your social media, I guess you've beaten any Oklahoma company that manufactures OKC, cellos, right? To the punch.
I didn't beat OKC at all. You know what I mean? But, you know, we're different things.
What I wanted to mention before we let you go, I checked out Okari's website, and it's really great. It's really fascinating. The story is amazing. But check out the video section. I was just telling him there is a cover of him solo doing U2's With or Without You, and I got goosebumps listening to it. And I thought it was just an amazing breath of a classic rock song that you just kind of, it's weird. You stayed faithful to it, but you took it in a new direction at the same time.
Yeah. You know what I've developed a big appreciation for after playing that song is The Edge has really contributed almost a singular and a unique contribution to like guitar playing and specifically to that U2 rock and roll scene. Mm-hmm. You know, people really strum and riff guitars, particularly electric guitars, and honestly I gravitate to that as well too, but his arpeggiated like harmonic thing is, it's so warm and enveloping, and it's not the most obvious sound to come off of the instrument, and I think maybe that is what I'm also drawn to in that song. There are a couple of moments there when I'm using harmonics, I think kind of the way that he uses harmonics. Mm-hmm. And it just fills up the song. You know what I mean? I kind of wanted to steal it and put it in all my songs, but it's kind of his thing, but I love it. And, you know, and then Bono and, you know, the tradition really of U2 to have these very honest and sincere and earnest communications is something I also gravitate towards. And this idea that, you know, the people you love, the work that goes into making those relationships fruitful and beneficial for both people, for all the people involved, like, you know, parents and children and husbands and wives and grandparents. And, like, the reality is that that's really, really important and hard work. And there are moments when it's life-giving, and then there are moments when it feels draining. And that's just the work, I think. And that's maybe the beauty. And that's what is captured for me in that song. Like, it's so beautiful, and it's so honest, and it's so vulnerable, and it's so bare. And I tear up sometimes when I play it, and even sometimes when I listen to it. So, yeah.
I can imagine that. It is a powerful song. But I mean, with the stuff you're coming out, I think you're going to make people look at music, and especially at the cello, in a whole new way. And I'm keeping my fingers crossed that you are the leader of the cello loopers.
Thank you.
In the country and internationally, they're going to go to you first.
I hope so one day. You know, I think that's the goal. And not so much out of fame or desire to be first, but, you know, I think I got a lot of things to say.
Yeah.
And a lot of things I'm still working through musically. And I think as long as I have questions, I'll have music. So
that's very cool. Again, his name is Okori Johnson, otherwise known as OK Cello. Thank you so much for coming on the show.
Jim, thank you so much for having me. Should I say Jim, the podcast sherpa? I love it, man. Good stuff. Good stuff.
Internet thingy at sherpalution.com.
Thanks a lot for swinging by the Sherpa screening room, and a special thanks to Okori Johnson for hanging out and letting me get to know him. Be sure to check out his website, www.okcello.com, and you can find out if he's going to be playing near where you live, and you can hear some really cool music. And also, while we're on the subject, thank you so much to Christina Bauer for making this interview happen. Thanks again, Christina. She always gets me good stuff, you know. And while we're talking about okcello.com, check out some of the videos, and there is an amazing cover that I refer to in the interview, and I'm going to include the link right here in the show notes, and you can click on it, and you will just be amazed by it as much as I was, I'm sure. That'll do it for me, and we are here with episodes every Wednesday and Sherpa Selects every Saturday, where we are featuring some of our older episodes. So be sure to check those out, too, if you're new to the show and you might have missed the earlier stuff, as they say. You can also hear us on podcast apps everywhere, sherpalution.com, or the Sherpalution YouTube page. I'm all over the place. And if you can, please leave a nice review on Apple Podcasts, and once we get enough reviews on there, we're going to be giving away some podcast merchandise. Yes, from this show. No, not from Joe Rogan's show. I don't think I'm allowed to do that anymore. So that'll do it for me, folks. I guess we will see you next time. And until then, I say to you, viva la Sherpalution. Let's go, Lord Mr. Bruce.
Thanks for listening to the Sherpa Screening Room. Don't forget to subscribe, rate, review, and share this podcast. I'm Mr. Bruce, and this has been a Sherpaloo Studios production. Viva la Sherpalution.
You know, Rebels, if you've been checking out some of my promotional ads on social media, you'll be aware that I have been using a lot of AI programs to help me create ads. But you know what? There's a lot more uses for AI than just funny little videos. And I'd like to introduce one of our new sponsors, Podium. It is a leader in creating AI tools for podcasters. Now, let's say you've got a podcast, or maybe you're even thinking of doing a podcast. You're probably wondering, well, how can AI be integrated with your workflow? I'll tell you about Podium. As a podcaster, you know that writing show notes and creating chapters and transcribing episodes takes a lot of time, and it can cost you a lot of money too. But you know what? That's where Podium comes in. It's an AI tool designed specifically for creators and podcasters with the goal of making post-production tasks quick and easy. And in just a few minutes, Podium generates show notes, chapters, summaries, clips for social media, a full transcript, suggested episode titles, social media posts, and more. Whew, that's a lot of work for one little program. Your show notes are key to your podcast success because it helps new listeners find your podcast and they'll know if it's a fit for them. You know, it's kind of like too many podcasts. It also improves your SEO. That's your search engine optimization. Ooh, big phrase there. And overall accessibility. And with Podium, you can focus on creating a great podcast and let Podium's AI do the heavy lifting. But Podium isn't just for solo creators and podcasters. It's a game changer for editors, producers, marketers, agencies, and production studios. Teams that use Podiums are able to increase workloads, decrease turnaround times, and improve their quality. How does it work? Very easy. First, go to Podium's website, and you'll see that link that's right there in the show notes. You get 3 hours free just to try it. Pretty cool, huh? And using that link also supports this show as well. And you know what else happens? Because I'm a good guy. You use my link, you will get 50% off for your first month. So visit the site, upload an MP3 file, and download your files, and that's it. And if you need anything else, you can use Podium GPT to generate articles and any marketing copy you might need in seconds. Instant show notes, transcripts, chapters for your podcast or channel. This will level up that podcast. So check out Podium today.